racing to the first tee, knowing what fun it will be. Soon the starter will call me to the first tee.
We want to welcome you back into the Grill Room with Bob and Jay this week. We'll talk about what's happening in the world of golf and then get caught up on the world of collegiate golf from a head coach's viewpoint. Only the University of Texas men's golf coach, an old buddy, John Fields. Jay, there's still 11 states with no golf rules in place. I think Illinois might be about to change. I want you to bring us up on that. And if they do, does that mean I can play Gateway National when I get to the St. Louis area? Give me an update.
Well, starting Friday, Bob, Governor J.B. Pritzker is loosening the restrictions as it relates to golf. There are still very strong restrictions. We are at two players per group, only twosomes, walking only, 15 minutes apart tee times. Now, there is a provision that says if you have a disability or a physical limitation, you may take a cart, a single rider cart, but at least it's a start for the state of Illinois. I also have some big news as it relates to Normandy Golf Club, where I used to be. That historic property, the oldest public golf course west of the Mississippi, is back in business. It has been revived. The Metropolitan Amateur Golf Association in St. Louis, formerly run by Tom O'Toole Jr., former president of the United States Golf Association, his organization has joined with a not-for-profit named Beyond Housing, and they have gotten the lease of the property, and it's their hope that within the next year they'll purchase the property and try and make it one of the signature properties in St. Louis once again.
Boy, if we don't say anything else during the course of this show, that certainly qualifies as some exciting news. I mean, Normandy, it's more than a golf course. It's a landmark, and it's tied to the history of the game. Man, I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, you look at the fact that it was Babe Ruth's favorite course in St. Louis. Babe Zaharias and her husband played there a number of times. Mickey Rooney, when he used to be in the theater and do a performance in St. Louis, would come out and play. A lot of history. And, the area is, as you know so well, what I don't want to say this is going to be an East Lake project. I think that's a unique, unique situation that they had down there and what they did. But Bob, the hope is, and with Tom being a former president of the United States Golf Association and kind of housing his local golf organization at a facility with a golf course, the potential is really good for the old girl to shine for a long time.
Well, one of the most astute people I ever met in conjunction with the United States Golf Association, Tom O'Toole, had to be near the top of that list. He just loves golf, and I just firmly believe, and I'm still excited just to hear that news that you gave us, Jay, but with Tom O'Toole and Normandy, maybe Jay Randolph back in the picture, who knows on that? If they make the dollars sweet enough, I think my man will go back. But anyway, great news, and we wish everybody connected with that certainly the best of luck. Speaking of luck, that's exactly what I think, Jay, the PGA Tour is going to need to pull off this event. It's scheduled for June 7th, the first start of the PGA Tour at the Charles Schwab Challenge. No spectators, but how do you like its chances?
Well, I'm getting a sense, you know, with obviously I'm mentioning Illinois opening back up golf, seeing reports throughout many states. I don't know whether it's correct or not. Let me just state that. But it does appear that we're starting to get some things churning again. As you said, Bob, no spectators. They've mentioned players, caddies, tour officials, the rules officials. There'll be only probably a handful of local host people. You know, you used to see people, 100, 200, 300 people in shirts that were helping out with the tournament. That's not going to be the case off the bat. I'll be interested to see how they're going to do the broadcasting, We talked before the show with our executive producer, Janice, wondering how many media will be let in, how will the event be covered. But I think it's a start. And, you know, I think in the next couple of weeks, we'll start seeing players make commitments and starting to pick their schedule. I just hope we're not jumping back too quick. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's really a difficult position because coming back too quick, certainly a disaster. Waiting too long, certainly a disaster. Interesting to note that one of the areas of concern are rakes in the bunker. I mean, I don't know why each group can't have, you know, assign their own rake, just put it on the back of the caddy. What the heck, he carries everything else. And I know this much, if the players were given the choice, you could have rakes or you could have spectators. Those spectators would be turning on their TVs.
Yeah, they're going to want the conditions as good as they can get them in those bunkers. I'm sure they'll come up with something, maybe a smaller rake, like you said, that'll be carried by a caddy or somebody associated with the group. As we talked about last week or 2 weeks ago, Bob, you know, and some guys have tweeted about it, there's going to be some lost balls without spectators out there. And there's going to be some interesting results if some of the, you know, the staging, the galleries and the tents are not there. It's going to be fascinating to see how it all plays out. And I think everything is going to kind of be a test while trying to do everything they can to follow the right guidelines. So I don't know what they'll do as it relates to rakes. We'll see. We're not even giving out scorecards, Bob, when Gateway reopens. You know, that they don't want, the state of Illinois doesn't want people in the clubhouse, no people in the pro shop. If you order food, it's brought out to you. So I think, you know, every state seems to have different ways they're restarting. And the PGA Tour is going to have to work through it. And it may even be different, potentially, Bob, depending on what city they're in or area they're in.
Well, I always dreamed of playing a golf course with no scorecard. I always thought I'd have a lot more fun. I think you and I should hold a meeting immediately after this show. Why don't we design a temporary disposable rake? In other words, it lays in that bunker until somebody has to use it. Once it's used, it's disposed of. A replacement is put in there. And we get the best of both worlds. And we get a little change in our pocket.
I'm willing to do anything these days to find a little extra dough out there so we can be ready when they start shuffling the cards.
We'll be talking a little bit more of that way of life later on. In the show is a good friend of the show and somebody that I've known for a long time. A big celebration of his birthday this week, but we'll keep people guessing as to who that individual is. Well, taking a look, if everything goes according to plan, Jay, 36 events, 3 playoff events, and all the events are going to be up to 144. Players to give them a little more playing opportunity. I think that's pretty good. And what's going to happen with FedEx points? Do you have that?
Well, at this point, there hasn't been any announcement on an adjustment. They're still hoping to do it exactly the way they've done it with the 3 playoff events. You know, again, you're going to have 75% of the schedule, basically, which is, to a certain extent, kind of remarkable, thinking where we were a couple of weeks ago and wondering, Bob and I wondering if we'd see a shot played. So I don't know that there's going to be any adjustment to the FedEx Cup, except the difference is the FedEx Cup comes before the United States Open and before the Masters. So, you know, there's a lot of things I'm sure that they're looking at. As we talked about, the U.S. Open being played the week before the Ryder Cup, it's going to be a unique time. And if it all goes well, it should be great for golfers. I mean, for golf fans, because the quality of events and probably the quality of fields is going to be stellar.
No news, I don't think, Jay, from the Korn Ferry Tour schedule.
Well, they've had an event postponed, three others canceled. They are hoping to restart with a new event that same week that the PGA Tour gets back at the Dye Valley course at the TPC Sawgrass. They kind of created this one, and it will be operated without fans. And of course, this is the other course that's there at Sawgrass. And I think it's kind of just planned as a one-time event to get things back going. And we'll see what happens schedule-wise with them. I haven't really heard anything on the Champions Tour. They're probably going to be, and partly because of the over 50 situation, and a lot of their fans are in an older demographic, they probably will be the last to get going. The LPGA is making strides. The one thing I saw today, the Northeast Amateur, the third week of June has been postponed. So a lot of the wonderful amateur events have already been canceled. I saw the USGA canceled the junior boys and junior girls, and that stinks because that's such a big event for young golfers. But, you know, it's what we got to do right now, and I'm sure coming up a little later when you talk with the coach from the University of Texas, Coach Fields, you know, it's a whole new ball game for him.
Well, there's been a lot of things canceled, but I don't think this event is going to be canceled. And you and I have been at some good birthday parties and probably not some good birthday parties. But I got to believe the one being celebrated today, John Daly, 54 years old. A lot of people said he'll never make 54. Well, he certainly fooled a lot of people. In reality, though, one of the real good guys out there. I mean, you know, I remember that 91, you know, PGA Championship. I think it's one of the great trivia questions of all time in that there's only been one caddy to win back-to-back majors one year to the next, the same major, with two different players. And it happened because John Daly, ninth alternate, as you well know, Jay, into the PGA Championship, replaced Nick Price. Nick Price, his wife was about to give birth. He drops out. He asked John Daly, "You want my caddy?" He's a fellow by the name of Squeaky Medlin, who was legendary on the tour. And John Daly says, yep, he takes Squeaky. John didn't even get to play a practice round, by the way. He got there late on Wednesday, teed off on Thursday. But the following year, Nick Price comes back to play in the PGA, and he wins, and still Squeaky's on the bag for Nick Price. So only caddy to win back-to-back, same major, in 2 years with two different players.
And Squeaky, you mentioned, you're right, was on the bag here in St. Louis in 92 at Belle Reve when Nick got the PGA here. And JD is, I mean, you couldn't write JD's story. Nobody would believe it. And he's a unique individual. Both you and I have had the opportunity to hang with him, which in itself is unique. And happy birthday. Hard to believe next year it'll be 30 years.
Yeah, I mean, that's incredible.
Yep.
Lately, I've been hanging out with John Daly on a yearly basis, even though when I'm talking to him, I'm thinking we're standing in a minefield because we're in the parking lot of Hooters down at Augusta, where John, for the last 18 years, has been in the parking lot selling autographed shirts, autographed hats, anything you want autographed. John Daly is there to accommodate. And I think it was 2 years ago, Jay, a lady pulled in the parking lot, got so excited seeing John Daly, she crashed into his mobile unit, almost pinning John Daly. But he was quick on his feet. He got out of the way. John Daly and the Masters have a strange tradition ongoing.
That is for sure. There's no doubt about that. And Bob, we've got the Tiger Phil 2. Apparently, it is going to happen. It's going to be on TNT. I still have not seen any announcement as it relates to the venue. I would imagine it will come in late May, I would think, or, you know, maybe the third or fourth week of May. It's going to be Tiger Woods, you remember him, and Peyton Manning versus Phil Mickelson and Tom Brady. And, you know, Phil has been very vocal and having fun with it on Twitter. You know, we kind of wondered how that first one would go. It got a lot of people to watch, but I think a lot of people said, well, okay, that was fine. But I think with the situation now, Bob, with people just jonesing for golf or anything, just to have four of the biggest sports stars in the last 30, 40 years out there on a golf course, probably be a pretty big draw.
Well, they haven't announced how much they're going to pay everybody to watch. So we'll wait on that. I think a little rematch with Jay Randolph Jr. and Bob Bubka might draw as much attention as it's an idea that's come and gone. And, you know, you always hear, don't beat a dead horse. Well, this horse, you know, haven't even got to the starting gate. So.
Yeah, I almost think that, you know, people had talked about when this whole thing started that, you know, maybe seeing JT and Jordan play a round together, or, you know, doing it with a different camera, a different look. I don't know. I think it'll be very interesting. I mean, there's a lot of things they could do. You know, they got the new Jordan golf course down there. Jordan's getting a ton of attention with the documentary on ESPN that they've been running. You know, I'm here in Florida as one of the places it might be. I'd love to see him go to a place you don't see. Hell, open up Pine Valley for a day. Let the world see Pine Valley. It's going to be interesting to see what they do. And, you know, it's a made for TV type deal at a time where there's just not much available, you know, unless you want to watch replays of golf tournaments. So, you know, they'll get me. I'll tune in, but I don't know whether it's going to change my life.
Yeah, but I think you just came up with a heck of an idea. I mean, it's a big attraction. Obviously, Tiger and Phil, Manning and Brady.
Yeah.
But the biggest attraction would be Pine Valley. I mean, people would, you know, dearly love.
Just to see it.
To see it. You're right. Matter of fact, it would be so good that if those four didn't show up and they just showed the 18 holes at Pine Valley, it probably would be a huge success.
Absolutely. Right when it was announced, I put out there on Twitter, if you had to choose a course of the United States for these guys to tee it up at, where would you choose? And I put a place that's near and dear to you and me, again, one that not many people have seen, National Golf Links. You know, both you and I have a tremendous affinity for that spot. But, you know, why not try and do something like that? But, you know, in the end, it'll probably be, you know, some resort or something, because somebody's got to step up and pay for it when it's all said and done.
Yeah, and of course, the issue of spectators, that would be another big issue. I mean, four guys out there playing with no spectators, I don't know.
Well, I guarantee you, Bob, the folks at Ladbrokes over the pond and here in the States with DraftKings and all the various outlets will... they'll have that one fried, dyed, and laid to the side. They'll have everything you could possibly get on that one.
Yeah, well, GolfBet has already listed Tiger Manning as favorites. Why not? I mean, Phil is going to be 50 years old in June. Now, if they want to put John Daly in playing somebody, as long as if they had to do everything that John Daly does for the 24 hours before the start of that match, he could give Tiger and Phil five shots aside and dust them easily. Believe me, they couldn't stand up to his pregame ritual.
No, there aren't many that they can hang. You got to go way back to the 50s for some guys that could probably hang with JD. So we'll keep our eyes on that. And each week, what we're trying to do is let people know what's going on. And as we continue to move forward, we're going to have more announcements of what's coming up and golf being played. And as I mentioned, Bob, earlier, the Governor J.B. Pritzker of Illinois has opened up the state of Illinois on May the 1st for golf. And let's learn a little bit more about a wonderful track just over the Mississippi River in St. Louis, Gateway National. You're listening to In the Grill Room with Bob and Jay, and we're heard on KTRS, the Big 550 in St. Louis, Stitcher, iTunes, Audio Boom, Spreaker, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or you could just ask your smart speaker Alexa, and you'll be connected. Enjoy golf as it was meant to be played at Gateway National Golf Links, a stunning links-style course in the St. Louis area. After all, it is the number one public golf course in St. Louis, and it's the only one with bent grass fairways. Only public course in the region with bent grass fairways. Gateway National offers golfers the rare opportunity to return to the rich traditions of the game with rolling links in the heart of the country. Gentle mounds and plenty of tall grasses, spacious fairways, and of course, when you play number three, well, you just aim for the Gateway Arch. That's right, the iconic St. Louis Arch is right there. Gateway National Golf Links, the number one public golf course in St. Louis and the only one with bent grass, with a friendly staff to make your day a memorable one, to make your tee time the best way and the best rates, are online at gatewaynational.com. An added perk, if you live here in the St. Louis area, you purchase the season pass. Walters Golf Management manages 8 other properties, and you'll get playing privileges at those golf courses. Gateway National, always in great shape. And remember that website, gatewaynational.com. That's where you'll find the best rates. gatewaynational.com. Thanks for hanging out with us in the Grill Room with Bob and Jay, Jay Randolph Jr. You can find me on Twitter at STL Golf Geek. You can find Mr. Bubka at Bob Bubka, V-O-G, that V-O-G appropriately for the voice of golf. And the voice had the chance to catch up with a man who is dealing with young people and trying to get them back on the course. Will seniors be able to come back next year? What about the incoming freshmen? A lot of things to learn as Bob sits down and chats with the University of Texas men's golf coach, John Fields.
You're listening to The Grill Room.
Most of the time in The Grill Room, we're talking about professional golf. I thought we'd take another look at a different aspect of golf, and certainly golf at the highest level. I'm talking about collegiate golf. And when I say collegiate golf, you only have to look to the University of Texas to see how programs are done first class with great players. And now longtime coach there by the name of John Fields. John joins us this morning. John, thanks for taking time out of your busy day to talk some golf here on The Grill Room.
Well, thanks for having me, Bob. I really appreciate it. And thanks for the kind words. I'm very blessed to be the fifth coach at Texas over almost a 90-year period. It's a great place, and it has bred multiple champions.
You know, Coach, when I think of collegiate golf, my first thought is, you know, recruiting. I mean, it's got to be fierce competition amongst coaches to get players, quality players, to come to their school. And you have to make the determination with, you know, are they a good fit? Are they, you know, capable? Do they have the talent to play at the University of Texas? I'm assuming a lot of decisions have to be made before you would actively seek a player to come play for you.
No question about it. I was blessed early in my career. I've been at this. I'm in my 33rd year. My wife and Pearl has been with me for almost 40 now. And amazing in a golfer's life that you could have that kind of a life with a wonderful woman like Pearl. But bottom line, my very first recruit, truthfully, there was two of them. Tim Herron, who's lumpy on the PGA Tour now. I was at New Mexico for 10 years. Prior to being at Texas, where I've been for 23 years. But Tim Herron was amongst my first class at New Mexico, along with Brian Corton. Now, Brian Corton today is the assistant at Texas A&M, but he also got his PGA Tour card for a short period of time. Brian's diminutive in stature, 5'3", but a great heart and a hell of a player. Tim Herron, on the other hand, you know, went on to have an unbelievable career. And he's not one of those guys that you would have thought would command that kind of success, because when you look at him, you certainly don't think of him as an athlete, but man, what a player. What a great, great player and a great person. Turned out to be a great dad and a great husband and out of the Midwest in Minnesota. And now he's venturing out on the Champions Tour, and I'm praying that he has great fortune out there. But, you look at a guy like that and you would say, well, why would you recruit a guy like Tim Herron? Well, I was a golf professional in Southern Arizona, and he and his dad came down to play in the Yuma Open of all places. And they did it 2 years in a row. The first year I played with Carson in a group. This is when I was golf professional prior to my professional or my coaching career, and had no idea that I was going to be a golf coach. But I played with Carson and found him to be a really fine player, probably in the second round of the Yuma Open. And then the following year, I got to play with his son, who was 16 years old at the time, and he was dramatically good. I could see it right then and there. And then, lo and behold, I get the job at New Mexico, and Tim was one of my first recruits. And you look at a guy like that can set the golf club so perfectly at the top. And I always thought that Tim had a magic move at Impact, where everything just lined up and that golf ball went exactly where that club face told it to. And he was a streaky, great putter, blessed with incredible drive, determination, and desire, and a competitive spirit like no other I'd ever seen. And it manifested itself in 4 PGA Tour wins and $23 million on tour. So he was kind of my precursor, the guys that I kind of look for. He was a champion, Minnesota State champion, and played in the U.S. Junior, and just quality all the way. Great attitude, great parents. He started my career, and we've gone from there.
Yeah, I know Tim very well. Outstanding man. Obviously, Coach Fields at University of Texas, you have a lot to offer when you're talking to a recruit about coming to UT. What are the top 3 things that you look for in a young golfer in formulating your decision to try and recruit somebody to come play for you?
Well, we look for him to be a winner. Whether a state high school champion, a state junior champion, that would be at a kind of a minimum. I always thought that qualifying for the U.S. Junior was a big deal, still is. Making the match play in the U.S. Junior is a big deal. So their golf success on a national or international level is number one. I want them to be a champion. That's key. I want them to have the ability to get out and play on a national or international level, because sometimes we take commitments. The NCAA has changed their rules now where we can't talk to them until they're juniors. But we got Cody Gribble, who was a PGA Tour winner, who is a PGA Tour winner, when he was in eighth grade. And you could tell that that guy was just going to be great right then and there. And Cole Hammer, who has been now the number one amateur in the world and the Mark McCormick medal winner, was virtually cut from the same cloth. He was just thick into being a fantastic golfer even when he was in eighth grade. And so looking for that championship spirit and their international or national success is a big deal. Their parents, to me, are a big deal. So because they're going to provide them with the love and support and maybe the competitive desire and all those different things. I've had a few dads that have just been spectacular in that department, and they stick out to me because they're great people, but they were able to convey those kind of things without being obtrusive and creating a real wedge between themselves and their sons. So parents are really big. Success is really big. And then just ultimately how they play the game, how they swing the golf club, what are their fundamentals and those sort of things. And then the fourth thing would be, how are they going to do at school? Because we've got to have them focused in that regard. And so if you get a guy like Jordan Spieth, that guy is an A student. And that was the least of our worries when Jordan was at Texas. And right now I've got a great crew. They're all good students, great people, and really fine players.
We're talking with Coach John Fields from the University of Texas. Is it getting more and more like basketball, where I see, a lot of one-and-dones? They go to school for 1 year, and then, the money, the attraction of the money is so great in the NBA that they opt to go out. With the money that's now available on the PGA Tour, are a lot more, or is it the same number or less number of quality recruits that go to play for whatever school decide that, after a year or two that they're ready for the PGA Tour? Is that a growing problem or not?
I really don't think so. I think that that's just a rarity still in collegiate golf. If you think that there's over 300 Division I programs in men's golf, there's nearly 150 Division II, but truthfully, over the course of play with junior college, Division I, Division II, Division III, NAIA, you've got thousands of young golfers, and maybe one or two guys might get out there early in their career. And we've been successful and very fortunate to recruit some of the best junior golfers, really, to play the game ever. And once in a while, those guys do go out early, whether it's a Bo Hostler, a Jordan Spieth, Brandon Stone, who plays on the European Tour and has won three times out there. Those guys are the exception to the rule. You know, Ben Crenshaw was only at Texas for 3 years, but he won three NCAA championships and then went straight out and won the Texas Open. And then you get guys like John Cook, who were only at Ohio State 2 years, and Bobby Clampett, who played, 3 years at BYU years ago. So it's basically the same, to be quite honest with you. I think now there is a guy or two that'll make a decision to turn pro because they just flat don't like school or they're not capable of doing well in school, and they'll go out there. But usually those are the kind of guys that you probably will not find that they're going to have a career out there. Once in a while, you'll get a guy. And then you had a guy like Kevin Na, who bypassed going to college, and he's had tremendous success. So those guys are the exception to the rule. It is not the norm.
Now, it's my understanding, Coach, that the NCAA, due to the coronavirus, has made a decision that, to me, seems like it's going to be beneficial to anybody that's in school right now. Can you explain to our listeners what I'm talking about?
I will, and there's two great things in combination with each other. The NCAA has made a ruling to allow our players who are in spring sports, so our collegiate athletes who are in spring sports, which is tennis, golf, track and field, to all recover a year of competition, no matter what year they were in. So the seniors can come back, even if they've graduated, and take a limited number of hours and come back and compete their another year. If you are a freshman, you get another year to compete. So that's great. They basically put back 1 year in everybody's pocket. So that is going to be sensational for our players. The other thing that has happened is the PGA Tour has announced PGA Tour University, and they are incentivizing young people to finish their degree or finish their 4 years in Texas or any place where they might play, and give them an opportunity, if they're in the top 10 of the senior class coming out, to have an option to play on the Corn Ferry Tour or one of their satellite tours like the Canadian Tour, Latin American Tour, or the Asian PGA Tour. So those two things in combination are going to reinvigorate immediately collegiate golf at a high level. And I'm just so proud of what I'm a PGA member, certainly not a member of the PGA Tour, but I'm very proud of what the PGA Tour has done. I'm happy what the NCAA has done. What it's going to do is continue to create opportunities. We just need to get through this virus and get back on a golf course and get competing and get back on the business of enjoying our lives.
John Fields, thank you so much for taking time out and Next time I'm in Austin, as you know, I'm good friends with Sonny Rhodes, who did play for Harvey Penick. Oh, and I did ask him, he did not win the Massengale Trophy, but you shared that with me. What is that story?
Well, the Massengale Trophy, which Sonny was referring to, was started by a guy named Hap Massengale, who was a very renowned good golfer from Fort Worth, played quite a bit of golf with Ben Hogan, and was a sensational amateur golfer. In 1944, collegiate athletics was put on hold for a year. So Hap Massengale came to Harvey Penick, who was our coach at the time, and told him, hey, would you like to have an inter-squad tournament? And Harvey said, I'd love to have some sort of competition for my guys. What do you suggest? And he said, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll donate a beautiful silver cup. And what I would like to do is establish that as the inter-squad tournament for the University of Texas on an annual basis going forward. So in 1944, the only competition that was played at the University of Texas for men's golf was the inter-squad tournament. And from there, that has kept our team charged over the years with names like Justin Leonard, Tom Kite, Ben Crenshaw, Morris Williams, Brad Elder, Bo Hostler, Jordan Spieth, and Scotty Scheffler that have won the Massengale Cup. And it has been a wonderful ongoing competition inside of our team that all the participants would know well, because it's an annual tournament. It's been structured different ways. Today, because we're playing match play at the NCAA, we've made it a match play event and double elimination to make sure that our guys get all kinds of great competition at the end of the spring. I love the fact that Hap Massengale did that for us. And there was a guy, his nephew, who reinvigorated it during my time, a guy named Larry Massengale, who has researched it and gave me all the information about Hap. And Larry lives in Lubbock and is a big Longhorn fan. And we are in their debt, because that has been a great tournament for us over the years.
Well, if you want to talk to any of your participants that are going to compete for that cup, I have permission for you to use the name Sonny Rhodes. He missed a one-foot putt that would have tied him and forced the playoff, and that was back in the late 50s. Guess what, Coach Fields? It still bothers him to this day that he missed that one-foot putt to win that prestigious trophy. So, Coach Fields, hey, thanks, and maybe all your players hit them straight and every putt find the bottom of the cup. I appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bob. Hook 'em horn.
Well, now you're up to date on what's going on around the world of golf. That's it for this week.
So on behalf of our executive producer, Janice Self, Jay Randolph Jr., and myself, Bob Bupka, a big thank you for being part of our Grill Room family. Please follow us on Twitter at TGRGolf. Of course, you can like us and follow us on Facebook and on Instagram at The Grill Room Golf Show.